Some eminent scientists openly challenge the theory of evolution, which is being taught as a fact by many high school and college professors. I'll be back in a moment with the most authoritative answer to the theory of evolution. Hello, this is Joe Cruz on the Amazing Facts broadcast, Facts Which Affect You. In our last broadcast, we introduced the subject of evolution, and we promised to tell you today God's answer to evolution, to give the most authoritative explanation yet of evolution. We also found, of course, certain basic tenets of the evolutionary theory. We told about three that must be true and must be proven true before the theory of evolution can stand any test. We discovered that all three of those contentions of the evolutionists fall flat. They don't hold water, friends. They're not scientific at all. In fact, the entire theory has been proven absolutely unscientific. You know, friends, the great God we serve has given an abundance of evidence in science of the power of God. You take, for instance, the law of gravitation. How is it that the sun and earth attract each other through 93 million miles of space? There's absolutely nothing between them, of course. We know they do attract, but we don't know how. The best answer, I think, is in Colossians 1, where it says that through Christ, all things consist or hang together. That's the actual meaning of the Greek word. A remarkable interview took place a few years ago dealing with this subject of the power and majesty of God. The man interviewed was Dr. Willis R. Whitney, Vice President of General Electric in charge of scientific research. Now, here is the news account of that interview. I'm going to quote the actual newspaper article. "We have theories," said the scientist, "but can't prove them." He picked up a small bar magnet from his desk. "Bring this near to a steel needle, and the needle will leap to the magnet. No one knows why, but we've worked out elaborate explanations. We speak of lines of force, and we draw a diagram of the magnetic field. We know there are no lines there, and field is just a word to cover our ignorance." And then he laid the magnet over a wooden vase in which was embedded another bar magnet, and the other magnet floated in space about a half inch above the vase. And he said, "What supports it?" Sir Oliver Lodge says it's the all-pervading ether, but Einstein denies that there's any ether. Which one is right? I say the magnet floats in space by the will of God. The magnet repels another magnet by the will of God, and no man can begin to give a more precise answer. "What do you mean by the will of God?" I ask. "Well, let me answer that with another question. What do you mean by light?" shot back the scientist. "The beam of light comes speeding from a star traveling hundreds of years, and finally it reaches your optic nerve and you see the star. How does it do that?" "We have our corpuscular theory of light, our wave theory, and now our quantum theory, but they're all just educated guesses. About as good an explanation as any that can be given is simply that light travels by the will of God." "The best scientists," he added, "have to recognize that they're just kindergarten fellows playing with mysteries. Our ancestors were, and our descendants will be also." Well, friends, there it is. That is the opinion of this great scientist from General Electric. Now, the study of the development of an embryo shows the marvelous plan of nature. The embryo will develop just in the right way. When the nerve cells begin to grow, they travel with uncanny accuracy exactly to their appointed place in the body of the developing embryo. All these things point to a great designer in nature. Sir William Dawson, president of Yale University and noted geologist, admitted, "I know nothing about the origin of man except what I'm told in the scriptures, that God created him. I do not know anything more than that, and I do not know anyone who does." So, friends, we see beyond any question that true science confirms rather than refutes the Bible story of creation. Charles Darwin, in his book, Descent of Man, discusses the thought at length as to where man might have made his appearance in the dim ages of the past. And then he adds this, "But it's useless to speculate on this matter." Well, friends, I'll say the same thing. I just wish Darwin had realized how useless such speculation was before he unleashed his godless theory to prey on the world. I wish he had thought of that before his idea had robbed millions of youth of their faith and left them cold and disillusioned. I wish he had thought of it before the wave of crime and juvenile delinquency began, which can be traced to a large measure back to the results of his theory. Those majestic words, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth," found in Genesis 1:1, are still the best explanation of life and existence. They express the most sublime elements to be found anywhere in philosophy. The way this creation came about is explained in Psalm 33, verses 6 and 9. "By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them by the breath of His mouth. For He spake, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast." Why, friends, the very word of God caused the worlds to come into being. Even modern physics believes matter and energy to be interchangeable. So what could be more reasonable than the very power of God bringing the worlds into existence? Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the one who died on the cross to pay the price of our sins, He was the active one who performed the work of creation upon this earth. In John 17:5, we read that He was in existence with the Father even before the world was. Now, notice in Genesis 1:26 and 27, "And God said, let us make man in our image." Now, here's a question. Why is the plural form used here? Why, friends, it's because Christ worked with the Father in the creation. And we read that in John 1, verses 1 to 3. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." Why, that's Jesus. He was the Creator. The fact that Christ was the Creator is further confirmed by the words of Hebrews. In chapter 1, verses 1 to 3, "God, who at sundry times and in divers manners spake in times past unto the fathers, hath in these last days spoken unto us by His Son, whom He hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also He made the worlds." So there's no question about it, friends. God and Christ are eternal. They're powerful. They formed life in the beginning, and it is to them that we owe our existence. Now, God desired that His people should always remember with gratitude His creative power. By remembering this, they would also remember the moral law which God laid down for His children. It would remind them of the Creator's power to also create a new heart within us to take the place of the old sinful heart. So, looking down across the centuries, God could see the dangers of forgetting Him through godless philosophies and theories. Consequently, He made provision for man to remember Him and His creative power by setting aside a memorial of His work. At the end of 6 days of the creation week, the Lord looked on His handiwork and realized that it was very good. When He instituted the Sabbath as a perpetual reminder of His love to the human family, this is recorded in Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3. "And on the seventh day God ended His work which He had made, and He rested on the seventh day from all His work which He had made, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it He had rested from all His work which God created and made." So you see, the Sabbath was given at the very time of creation. God sanctified it. And to sanctify, of course, means to set apart for holy use. Therefore, the Sabbath was set apart for holy use even before sin came into this world. By my friends, the Sabbath is God's answer to evolution. The seven-day week, which it has commemorated and kept in existence, is not based on any movement of the heavenly bodies. There's only one logical explanation of the fact that a seven-day week has come to us through history and has been known among all peoples on the face of the earth. That explanation is that God created this world in 6 days and rested the seventh and commanded every seventh day after that to be kept in His honor. Now, evolutionists are at a loss to explain the 7 days that were to be kept in His honor. Evolutionists cannot understand why that seven-day week has existed down through the ages and why the Sabbath was always kept through history. When the children of Israel were going to leave Egypt, Pharaoh complained that Moses made them rest. And the original Hebrew word there is Sabbath. In other words, Moses led the people to better Sabbath observance before he ever led them to liberty. In Exodus 16, it clearly shows there that the children of Israel knew about the Sabbath before the Ten Commandment law was given from Mount Sinai, for they were told not to go out there and gather manna on the Sabbath day. And then came that majestic hour when God gave His law with His own voice from the heights of Sinai and later wrote it with His own finger on tables of stone. In the very heart of that law was a Sabbath commandment given in Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work. Thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Now, friends, so solemnly is the warning given concerning the necessity of Sabbath observance that in Jeremiah 17, 19-27, God's people were told that their fate and their future depended on their faithful observance of the Sabbath. God warned that if they failed to keep the Sabbath, the city of Jerusalem would be burned. The actual destruction of the city in 70 A.D. was a grim reminder of that prophecy made by Jeremiah. And we know, of course, that the Sabbath was kept by Jesus. In Luke 4:16, we read that it was His custom to go to the synagogue on the Sabbath. In Mark 2:27, He claims the Sabbath as His special day and tells us that it was made for the whole human race. In Matthew 24:20, He warns His disciples concerning the destruction of Jerusalem, which was to take place 40 years later. He said, "Pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day." So Jesus actually urged His disciples to pray for 40 years so that the sanctity of the Sabbath would not be marred for them on the occasion of the destruction of Jerusalem. Now, not only was the Sabbath observed by Jesus, but it was also kept by the apostles. Acts 18:4 shows us that their manner or custom was to worship on the Sabbath. Acts 16:13 shows that it was the case even when they weren't meeting in the Jewish synagogue, when they were over in the Gentile land in Greece. Acts 13:42 tells of an instance when all Jews and Gentiles alike met with the disciples several times on the Sabbath. And in the writing of the Apostle Paul in Hebrews 4:9, after he'd been discussing the Sabbath, he said, "There remaineth therefore the keeping of a Sabbath for the people of God." And that's the marginal reading of it. And so, friends, a final text in Isaiah 66:22, "The Sabbath will remain so long as the earth stands, for it'll even be kept in the new earth." Listen, "For as the new heavens and the new earth shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord." So there it is. The Sabbath is eternal. God gave it to remind men of His power as the Creator, so that they would not begin to question that creation account in Genesis. And if men had always kept the Sabbath, there'd be no evolutionist now, no atheist, no agnostic in all the world. So God is trying to call people back to the Sabbath and back to His law again. And now, this is Joe Cruz saying goodbye for today.